Namaste, my precious Sangha. We are here to discuss the fourth noble fitness discipline of our precious little path, known to the outer world as holistic fitness. I'm looking out over the Adams River. Grandfather's sun is slowly setting over the La Plata. And it's quite a sayonara because the waves are splashing and the little rapids are glittering. The trees are coming into bud and the sky is absolutely brilliant and blue. How blessed are we? If we don't meditate, we find ourselves in a very precarious situation in this precious incarnation. And the precarious situation is that we miss the miracle of the mundane. Where there's no depth or perception training in our fitness, how can any of this come sacred or feel sacred to us? And if things don't become sacred to us, we lose our way very quickly in this short and precious lifetime that most of us have struggled gamely through eons to attain. And with that opening, I do wish to welcome you to our talk on meditation, the fourth noble discipline of a holistic fitness warrior athlete. Once again, I pulled a holistic fitness typical behavior, and I hammered myself pretty hard on a club ride. And when I left, I was working at the computer, and I didn't really judge the morning weather very well. So, you know, it looked sunny, and it looked warm, and so I put on my shorts and, you know, a little short-sleeve jersey. I did put on arm warmers and a vest. And I step outside, and I'm already, I have to kind of time trial to the start of the club ride, so I can't make any wardrobe changes. And it's absolutely freezing, man. It's like 45 degrees, and with the wind chill factor, it's going to, you know, it was like it got to freezing immediately. And to make matters more intense, our planned ride was to go up from Durango is about 6,500 feet, and we were going to go up to close to 9. So things weren't going to get any warmer. And so immediately I was beginning to apply holistic fitness meditation techniques. Not so much meditation, and we're going to talk about that, but meditation techniques. And it's actually the techniques of meditation that matter much more effectively in our day-to-day practices and engagements. So I was on my bike and I'm time trialing there. So, you know, there's two ways that you can either go at that moment and you can just suffer horribly in the miserable state that you idiotically put yourself in, or you can use it as another moment to strengthen this fourth noble discipline of holistic fitness. And it's kind of ironic that we only have three callers tonight, and in some ways I kind of planted a seed here doing this on a Saturday night, because as we'll talk about, sankalpa, or determination, is a pivotal point in a fitness warrior's lifestyle. And categorically, across the board, it's the meditation discipline that just really, really, one, separates a holistic fitness athlete or yogi from the rest. And also, it just really, really completely shifts the intensity of that which deepens our perception of life and our practice. So really, it's kind of reserved for the few and the brave. And I'm very, very pleased that you did what it took to get to this conference call tonight. I'm very deeply honored. And I would love to start with a fantastic couple of prayers, the first of which is from Padmasambhava. You have probably come across that name in my blog teachings. Padmasambhava, that word means lotus born. The lotus born, and he was a very powerful sage guru from medieval India. He was a master of Tantra Yoga. Tantra Yoga, and we're going to talk about that on one conference call. Holistic fitness is very much a modern tweaking of Tantra Yoga. Tantra Yoga is a holistic lifestyle approach to yoga. Padmasambhava was a Tantra yoga master, and he actually transmitted the Vajrayana Buddhism to both Tibet and, come on, Ilg, what's the country, the tiny little country near Tibet, not Nepal, the other one, my student,
Bhutan.
Jerry Roach, Bhutan. So, anyway, and that's just back, I think, in the 8th century. In those lands, he is known as Guru Rinpoche, which means the precious guru. And many, many people consider him as the second Buddha, the second Buddha. I'm going to read a couple of things he said. What's really why I bring him up is because Padmasambhava is an emanation. He's considered an emanation of Amitabha Buddha, who is the spiritual lineage head, the Buddha family lineage head of holistic fitness. So a couple of quotes by this very powerful yogi from the 8th century. If your spine isn't straight yet, make sure you bring it straight, because this stuff might go pretty deep. Padmasambhava said, "My father is the intrinsic awareness. My mother is the ultimate sphere of reality. I belong to the caste of non-duality of the sphere of awareness. My name is the glorious lotus born. I am from the unborn sphere of all phenomena. I consume concepts of duality as my diet. I act in the way of the Buddhas of the three times. I love that one line in there. I consume concepts of duality as my diet." I have struggled now I've made effort here and there, but mostly struggled, to be quite honest, to bring meditation into my daily fabric of my life. And, it's the duality, just like this morning. Oh, my God, did I make a mistake on wardrobe? And it was so easy to default to the, oh, my God, it's way too cold. And, of course, as soon as I pull up to the club ride, everybody else is in these thermal full-length leg warmers and jackets and vests and things, and long-fingered gloves, and they're all bitching about how cold it is. And there in my little skivvies and goosebumps, and I'm like focusing on non-duality. And I just, quotes like that really, it's from the enlightened ones. I mean, Padmasambhava, if he went out the door today in my situation, I mean, he would, I'm feeling that he would absolutely probably laugh his way through the whole thing, because he would consider this this as an opportunity of consuming duality and being nourished by it. And this is really important, because as we begin this talk on meditation, it's going to come down to our dance with duality ultimately, if we're going to persevere in our meditation practice. I'm going to take a breath before the next Padmasambhava prayer. I hope you're enjoying this. So the second is not really a prayer. second quote from Padma is, quote, "Now, when the bardo of this life is dawning upon me, I will abandon laziness for which life has no time. Enter, undistracted, the path of listening and hearing, reflection and contemplation, and meditation, making perceptions and mind the path. And realize the three kayas, the enlightened mind. Now that I have once attained a human body, there is no time on the path for the mind to wander." It's so good, I've got to read it again. And I said the dualistic word good there, but if I wrote it out, it would have a little parentheses around the second O, and you know that. Okay. Let's listen to that again. I love the way all the masters say the same thing. This life is but a bardo. It's just training us for when we cannot take another body. Quote, "Now, when the bardo of this life is dawning upon me, I will abandon laziness for which life has no time. Enter, undistracted, the path of listening and hearing, reflection and contemplation and meditation, making perceptions and mind the path, and realize the three kayas, the enlightened mind. Now that I have once attained a human body, there is no time on the path for the mind to wander." Unquote. The three kayas, you may be wondering, is basically, it's an archaic term now that relates to the three gunas, which I've written about. So, but isn't that just it? I mean, here he is, and he's not assuming he's going to get another chance at a human body. He's like, for once I have attained this human body, there is no time for the mind to wander. And yet, look at how our society inculcates us and conditions us for our mind to wander. I mean, it's just, it pulls us to all types of entertainment instead of inner attainment. And it's hard for, you know, Dharma teachers like myself to even make a living in this ocean of, you know, outwardly, you know, entertainable kind of focused people. That's why I preciously endear myself to those of you that are willing to tread this steep and direct path. Taking another breath. So I feel since tonight is a talk on meditation, we should sit. Let's just sit for 3 minutes. Let's sit like the ancient yogic warriors. Let's sit like the ancient spiritual athletes, which remain our endlessly protective and guiding and loving gurus and mentors and guides. In fact, whenever we are brave enough to sit down on Mother Earth as close to her as possible, and we fold our legs, prepare ourselves for meditation, I would love for you to be encouraged by the fact that if you could just look over your shoulder and astrally, you could see stretching behind you a lineage of thousands and thousands of spiritually enlightened or attained masters and yogis and spiritual athletes that have done what it took to kind of do the blogs of the day, whether it was on palm leaves or pictographs or whatever it took, oral transmission. But they wrote it down. They wrote down guidelines and beacons for us to follow. And really, if we can feel that in ourselves, oh my gosh, it's a very moving motivation to sit and to sit in the way that they you know, encouraged us to and taught us to. So Feeble Ill would love to encourage you right now to bring your spines elegant. It's a if it's possible for you to sit on Mother Earth or on the floor, that's fantastic. Or sit in a chair as I am, preferably with hips open, if possible, or the feet softly connected with Mother Earth. Allow your eyes to become gradually soft. And without undue effort, allow the eyes to softly begin gazing inward at the spot right between the eyebrows, Ajna Chakra. If it helps, you can bring an indigo colored blue there. And if it helps, you may begin a gentle type of ujjayi breathing at the back of the throat. But really, our purpose here is not to overly manipulate the breath. And so with spine straight, our feet or our root of our spine grounded, we're just going to breathe for a few. And we'll do a very common, typical beginning level holistic fitness meditation of just counting the breath. So the instructions are very simple. Just as you begin kind of feeling in the groove for sitting, you're just going to notice, that's a big word, notice or witness, that you're taking an inhale. And without manipulating the breath, you're going to give that inhale a number one. You're going to let that inhale live a very full, rich, mature life. I want that inhale to, I want you to witness her going from infancy to toddlerhood, to adolescence, adulthood, old age. Let each breath live a full life, a rich life, an acknowledged life, like you and I would love to live as well. And then I'd love for you to kind of just witness the handing off of the inhale to that of the exhale. And similar to the inhale, let that exhale live a full, rich life as well, moving through the stages of its own life. It's funny how we're so quick to judge, you know, physical lives, but we ignore so many of our breath lives. Yes, it's life of the breath, which gives us our own life, isn't it? So just for a couple more moments now, just attend to the breath. I'm going to stop speaking. Just counting the breath now. Each inhale is fully with one. Each exhale, one. The next inhale would be two. Exhale, two. Now we're going to add another layer to this meditation. So maintaining the soft spaciousness of mind. Instead of counting the breath, I'm going to instruct you to bring the sacred mantra, the tribal mantra of Om Mani Padme Om. So when you get ready for this, when the inhale is ready to be witnessed, you inhale one length of the mantra. So you inhale, Om Mani Om. And then at the top inhale, you repeat the mantra one while suspending the breath. Om Mani Padme Hum. On the exhale, repeat the mantra twice. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. At the bottom of the inhale, in the breath, repeat the mantra. So it's the prescription is one round of the mantra on the inhale, one round of the mantra at the top of the inhale, two rounds of the mantra on the exhale, and one round of the mantra with the breath suspended on the outside at the end of the exhale. We'll just try it for a minute. And you may be. And very gently, you may release the mantra from the mind. Softly open your eyes. And if you need to, if you were sitting, you may kind of stand up or kind of shake the legs out. Congratulations. You notice a chemical shift. Or perhaps even a psycho-spiritual shift occurred, even with 4 minutes of a meditation practice. You may have found that counting the breath was more challenging than the mantra, or vice versa. And that's why it's important to have a Dharma teacher that knows what types of meditation preparations to give the student, because there are so many different institutions, emotionally, physically, genetically, karmically, and it's important to find a meditative tool, path, that kind of vibes well at first. Otherwise, we begin to get very disappointed. And most of the time, when people begin to sit, even for 3 minutes, we get like a 3-megaton Dharma teaching right off the bat. And this occurs with even quite advanced athletes who you feel like they should be able to focus their minds really well. In fact, I just went up to the college here in Durango, and I spoke to the FLC cycling team, who have earned more national titles than any other college, including huge universities like CU. We've won 13 national cycling titles, and these guys know how to focus, but do they know how to meditate? Well, your feeble teacher went in there and made them all sit down in their best meditation postures, which was, well, you know, challenging. Let me tell you, especially among the young kids nowadays, the postures are quite interesting. And I had them sit then, huh? You'd be proud. And we had a glorious time. I think a few lights went off. Because even within 3 minutes of sitting, a very fundamental Dharma teaching comes through, and that is we always want things or think things should be different than the way they are. It's like, well, you know, God dang, he made me sit like this, but now my knee is hurting and my back hurts. And, you know, I can't keep my pause, my little, oh, man, everything. How much longer is it going to take? You know, I'm supposed to be kind of the breath, but this is just ridiculous. How is this going to help me cycling and blah, blah, blah. You know, the mind just kind of goes off. So that's a huge, excuse my post-ride hack here. So, you know, that's absolutely a great, great, honorable, you know, kind of insight to realize that meditation, as the bumper sticker says, is not what you think. It's not what you think. Thinking, not allowed. Being present, however, is the whole kind of kit and caboodle. And just like at a carnival or a raffle giveaway, you do have to be present in order to win. And what we're winning is enlightenment. So in order to be present, it takes a little grunt work here of just accepting that, you know what, we might not have very clear an idea of our mind. I would like to say at this point in our sharing tonight that it's a little, sometimes a truth is a jagged pill, but really, and I speak from direct experience and about me myself, most of us are not ready to meditate yet. And you can imagine how kind of I feel, because I wrote this whole book and created this whole fitness philosophy, and I have meditation as, you know, my fourth of five. Really, when we say we're meditating, we're not really meditating, and I'm going to describe about that now. So though I call the fourth noble fitness discipline of holistic fitness meditation, I admit it to you that I'm conflicted, because very few of us truly meditate, at least yet. In fact, what we call meditation is not meditation. It's not meditation in the same way that we can say, well, I'm going to do a yoga class. We don't really do yoga in a yoga class. What we're doing is often, right? In fact, if truth be in advertising, really, they shouldn't be called yoga studios, generally speaking. They should be called asana studios, because really we just go there for the asana, the physical postures. And rarely is the vast science of the yogic tradition and teachings imparted. It's mostly just, it's kind of turned into another kind of fitness thing. So in the same kind of kind of icky kind of realization, what we call in practice meditation is really technically, at least in the yogic system with which I'm familiar with, it's known as Dharana. Those of you that have paid attention to my books and teachings, you'll recognize that word. Dharana is the sixth of eight steps in Raja Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. Now, this is a very beautifully crafted and safe, progressive science of self-transformation. I'm going to kind of take you through it here because it's important. Dharana, I just told you, is really a more appropriate term for what you and I practice in the context of our holistic fitness meditation efforts. Dharana means, in the Western equivalent, means kind of sustained concentration. Like today on the bike ride, when I was freezing my you-know-what's off, but I was like focused, it was the A riders with the B riders, and I'm trying to hold the wheels of the A riders, and we're just climbing, it's all just very kind of brutal stuff, and I'm just focused on staying on this guy's wheel, and that type of intense sustained concentration is Dharana. Now, Dharana leads to kind of a subcategory known as ekagraha, or one-pointed concentration. So Dharana and ekagraha are precise. are precisely what leads to meditation. Most people, in my professional, personal observation, are not really trained accurately to begin meditation. In typical American style, we kind of go from nothing to, I went to this 8-day meditation retreat, or I want to go to this meditation retreat, or I began meditation, and oh my God, it's great. That's an interesting place to be, because it's not a very safe way to embrace and condition and prepare the body, mind, and breath for genuine meditation. Now, fortunately, within the yogic system, which is embraced and kind of distilled cleverly into very attainable preliminary practices within our holistic fitness system, meditation can become a very real, very sacred, and deeply effective part of our journey. I need to spend just a couple moments here giving you an example of the beautiful, progressive, and in truth, the holistic steps of traditional yoga, which prepare us safely for meditation. I'm going to take a breath here. Interesting phrase, take a breath. Why not enjoy a breath? I am so feeble. So, this science of self-transformation through yoga, of which holistic fitness is a manifestation of, begins with the yamas and the niyamas. You can read all about this, of course, in TBT and other teachings. But the yamas and the niyamas, it's so exquisite how the masters, the ancient ones, did this. They set it up so perfectly. The yamas and niyamas are basically the ethical and moral guidelines, which really force us to become at one within the harmony of society and self. It forces our practice into our everyday life. So that because the yamas and the niyamas are there, we have to suddenly begin paying attention to our choices of actions, behaviors, words, personal cleanliness, and sexual and sensual restraint, and of course, devotion to our highest source. They use the word Ishvara Pranidhana as one of the niyamas. You know, that word Lord kind of weirds Westerners out, so I'd like to just call it the highest source. So after we kind of get through we kind of understand the yamas and the niyamas, kind of like the Ten Commandments or guidelines of yoga, we have to, you know, we're confronted with this whole thing of, gosh, I mean, I can't just go to the yoga studio and, you know, kind of be spiritual. I actually have to do this stuff in my everyday life, you know. And then it comes the asana, which, interestingly enough, was not part of the yoga system originally. It's as the human race began to de-evolve and we couldn't hold our focus, the masters came up with asana, the yoga postures. And the yoga postures systematically condition our capacity to begin focusing our mind, piloting our conscious breath, and ultimately making our physical body both supple enough and strong enough to sit appropriately for sustained periods of meditation. Eventually, I mean, every yoga class is designed, basically, if it's taught truly, to prepare the student for meditation. That's all it's done. It's the only reason why it was invented or created. Now, the next step, the fourth step, is pranayama. And that's the instrumental step, which is precisely where most American yogis kind of lose interest, because it requires us to perform daily dosages of progressively complex breathing exercises, which really force the mind to focus. There's that word again, force the mind to focus, while categorically shifting our constitution, both cellularly, physiologically, and subtly. It changes our bodies and minds in physical and subtle way, does the pranayama. Now, in holistic fitness, of course, you can think here of our daily EMR, early morning ritual, which, and in particular, within the EMR is the Nadi Shodhana. And if you're an online student, I'll assign, given your sincerity and you know, other factors, I'll assign different pranayams after, you know, a certain maturity is has been reached. You can also benefit from the pranayama during yoga classes by engaging the Ujjayi pranayama. In fact, most Ashtanga yogis, they don't do hardly any other pranayama except for the Ujjayi during their very vigorous and athletic style of asana. After the pranayama comes pratyahara, which means to restrain the senses within. So here, the yogi is trying to turn, to kind of learn to flip a switch. We have to learn to turn off the outer world, in order to inspect deeply our inner world. In fact, most people don't even realize that they are citizens of two worlds, an outer and an inner. And that is, I think, the best Western word that can kind of parallel pratyahara is introspection. That means to inwardly inspect. So you can see how the exquisite science is at work. It's it just gradually kind of trains us to go deeper and deeper within and really cultivate attention. And then the next step, of course, is dharana. Those are the practices which aim at developing sustained concentration. And in holistic fitness, of course, this is done largely by, of course, the EMR, and by using our fitness training to learn to focus the mind, make it more one-pointed. So if anything got through to you on that particular dissertation, it's that everything in the spiritual journey is a proven process. It requires kind of building a self-propelling momentum of a basic mental skill set toward an unwavering mind until the waves themselves, the waves of mind, settle and merge. And that's a huge word right now in our talk, merge. And what they're merged, what the mind waves are merging, or what Patanjali said in the very first, second yogic sutra, Yoga Nirada, it's the restraining of the fluctuating tendencies of the mind. That's what yoga is. So all of those steps that I outlined really kind of arrive at this one point where the waves settle and merge into the sleepless wakefulness. God, am I allowed to say that? Into the sleepless wakefulness of divinity herself. And that is what meditation, that's the definition of meditation, is where there's no effort any longer. You simply merge. So you do, like a ballet dancer, you train and you do countless repetitions of just just really intense, training until it merges into this effortless effort that we see on stage as the ballet. And it moves the common man to tears. Well, if you can get a common man to the ballet, it might move him to tears. But you know what I mean. So I hope I've illustrated that there's a lot of precursory work mentally to develop this skill set to one day, one moment, merge into bliss, into divinity herself. So for those of you who really seek a strategy toward meditation, if you're not an online student and you seek a strategy toward meditation, then seek that space space place, which happens spontaneously when thoughts no longer slip between the simplicities of non-dualistic emergence. into the divine. Now, that was a mouthful that just kind of came out. But really, that's why I don't even like to talk about meditation, because by talking about meditation, really, we kind of destroy it. And it's such a unique personal journey. You know, it is difficult to describe. So think about that key word, emergence. What does that word mean to you? What was your most memorable moment of emergence? What was your most memorable moment of emergence? What was your most memorable moment of emergence? Because that moment with Om in the word moment is going to matter in the bardo. And the more moments of emergence you can accumulate or deepen or mature, and then the higher up the vibratory frequency of the psycho-spiritual state will occur. So that self-questioning will tell us far more about our current level of entertainment than what retreat we went to or what book we read or, you know, what quote we put on Facebook or whatever it is. You know, it's that personal, most memorable moment of emergence. So I think I need to take a breath. Hold on. So distillation here is we don't do meditation. We succumb to it. We're not meditating until we emerge, which, sadly, scarily for most of us, means losing our minds. And that's why the crazy wisdom masters, I mean, they are quite content to just lead lives of absolute weirdness. So, because they don't care about what the outer world people think, because the outer world people are conditioned by external opinions and there's very little self-cultivation within the inner world. So it's just like Yogi Jiva said. He said, before you can find yourself, you must first lose yourself. And he spoke often. He spoke often about, you know, mimicking the animals and the children. Let them be your teachers. You know, and that kind of goes through until the ancient Olympians, I mean, from our caste, the warrior caste. They didn't win pro sponsorship contracts, they didn't win money, they didn't even win trophies. They earned nothing material. They wore only wreaths of laurel. Why? Because it was to remind them that glory is fleeting. They did not want their ego to be inflated just because they won a race or an event. They also recognized, however, that the integrity of character it took for them to win that race, that's the true trophy. That's what's endless. It's that destination that matters. It's the process. It's the ritual. It's the pilgrimage that makes all actions sacred. I'm reminded now of my beautiful quote, which I say probably too often while I'm teaching, but it's by that gorgeous Zen master who came to America in the early 60s, D.T. Suzuki. And he said, if we lose the spirit of repetition, our practice becomes difficult. If we lose the spirit of repetition, our practice becomes difficult. And that's why it's so hard to keep students in holistic fitness. It's why it's so hard for people to maintain what it takes to win a podium in a sport. It's because they lose the spirit of repetition. They think things should be other than the way they are. A Sanskrit saying that you've probably heard me say a lot. Practice 1,000 times and it becomes difficult. Practice 1,000,000 and it becomes easy. Practice 1,000,000 times 1,000,000 and it is no longer thou that doeth it, but it that doeth itself through thee. Not until then is that which is done well done. And that, my friends, is why so many elite athletes really beam their eyes the way they do. It is said that the eyes are the window of the soul, and you can sense that 10,000 times, 10,000 times, they've prioritized the spirit of repetition, of practice, of doing the do that we don't do. And that's why they beam. And that's why we clap. That's why we're so moved when the Olympics come around. Well, the Olympics are held every year. They're called World Championships. And every sport has them. And there's so much to learn and to be inspired by. But what makes meditation sacred? Even those elite athletes, they don't know. In fact, most interviews, if you watch closely, they say, I can't believe I did it. Well, there goes all the $10,000 they spent on their sports psychologist, because the sports psychologist probably had them visualizing exactly their belief. But you know what? When it comes right down to it, they can't believe it, because belief, my friend, is a fabrication of the intellect. And what it takes to get to the podium of a sport or of life or of enlightenment, it's not about the intellect. It's about intensity, acceptance, and the divine connection. And that is why we have to work toward meditation. It's that divine connection that matters most. It's the intensity that matters. Remember, the gem cannot be polished without friction. And as you know, as I've trained us, you and I, you know, there's no such thing as a good habit. A habit is mechanical. It keeps the spiritual self asleep. And that's why we, as holistic fitnesses, we begin each day by squatting down in yogi squat and mindfully brushing our teeth using our non-dominant hand, perhaps chanting the mantra. Because we need to start our day with that friction, with doing what is not easy in order to develop consciousness. Remember, warriors, that we must make anything that is unconscious conscious. We must make anything that is unconscious conscious. Opening the car handle on the door. And washing the dish. All the innumerable countless unconscious things that we do, we've got to make those conscious. That's what opens the gateway toward becoming a genuine meditator. Now, in my books, of course, I've outlined three levels of holistic fitness. You may remember them as passive, active, and formal. Passive has been described as, you know, reading poetry, doing artwork, or like I did yesterday, just kick your feet up in the front lawn, listen to the river, and gaze at clouds. Those are passive forms of meditation in the general public view of holistic fitness. I've already spoken to you more deeply about my conflict with the word meditation. The active, the next category, is more focused. It's like doing gardening. For me, it means waxing my skis, doing bike maintenance, to be in the gym and allow that active, you know, kind of focus of wax on, wax off, like in a Karate Kid, you know, doing the bike maintenance, lifting the barbell while you're running, feeling the foot hit Mother Earth. You know, that's an active form of meditation. Then we have the third category, which is formal meditation. And that's where, examples in our tribe, we do early morning ritual. We sit zazen. We might chant. We practice the pranayama. We do japa mala mantra. We use our blessed malas, and we run the mantra for a prescribed amount of rounds. Those are formal types of meditation, but there is always the fourth, just like the Om symbol, the triya, the fourth, the transcendent. And that is the sacred meditation, which kind of comes upon by itself. And this parallels spontaneous it's called Kevala Kumbhaka in pranayama. That means, you know, you do your pranayams, you do your breath practices, you're doing these countless repetitions of manipulating the breath, and then you kind of get every now and then, at least in my own experience, you get a moment of spontaneous suspension of breath. Spontaneous suspension of breath. And there's no thought. And there's no fear. There's no anxiety. It's just suspended. So with practice in the passive, active, and formal, it may just allow us toward that beautiful spontaneous little hit of what the world-class meditators know and live and practice. So, I cannot believe how much time has gone by. Okay, I still need to speak about connection and transmission. So why does chanting or doing our malas, doing the mantra with our malas, for instance, why does that qualify as a formal meditation practice while focusing our minds and strength training or asana or cardio doesn't? Well, really, it's about connection. And connection is what leads to transmission. You've got to tap into your Lord. You have to tap into your God. You have to tap into the sources, the gurus, the lineage from which you've manifested, because they're right there. They want the help. They need, you know, that's what they vibe for. And it's only through mantra or prayer done with sincerity and amped by intensity does the genuine transmission of our gurus, our lords, our teachers, our mentors, our deities, only then through the prayer, through the mantra, does transformation of our mental waves move toward becoming an astral portal targeting enlightenment. Taking a breath. Wang ging long 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 ling ling xing xing dong pong dong dong ting 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 chong chong ting huang long ching du rong chen ri zi de la xing xing tong mong dong xing xing duo su mo le ne ching ring du dong ching huang ting hua xi pa cha no ye guai ta pa no dong ting kong dong tu ring ring long
冷水清清,我身的清,多往南南平,放东外清,北北北北北,清东中区,马当道,清清王北,清清平,好,南关关关,您的清清朝人,清王生,土土,所爱,玄清,火,马北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北,北
That's an excerpt from, it's a sutra from the Chinrezig meditation, which I grew up with. And basically I said I was praying that by the force of evil karma gathered since beginningless time, pride causes beings to be born as gods and experience the pain of change and decay. May they all be born in the realm of Puttava, Om Mani Padme Om. In all my lives, may my actions, like Chinrezig's, liberate all beings from impure realms and spread the sublime sound of the six syllables in the ten directions. Through the power of praying to you, sublime noble one, may beings which I am to influence strive at virtue, be mindful of karma, and take up dharma for the good of all beings. Thus, praying intently, light emanates from your noble form and purifies all manifestations of impure karma and confusion. The place becomes Devachan. The body, speech, and mind of all beings becomes Chinrezig's. Appearance, sound, thought, inseparable from emptiness, all money paid me home. So when you have millions and millions of people chanting similar prayer like that, and when you have an eon of established, enlightened ones that have used those prayers, it taps you deeply into a whole new level, which makes meditation an absolute joy. Sure, it's hard. It takes effort to sit. Yet there's a way, and there's a light. I'm going to outline 5 steps toward meditation now. You might want to write them down. 5 steps toward meditation. Step 1, carve out a consistent practice time. one of my teachers used to say that a beginner should always practice meditation very short sessions, practice 4 or 5 minutes. And that's why you see like EMR and breath and posture, Bipa Guru. I've created an array of unbelievably effective meditative practices that really at least kind of bridge the gap between our inner and outer worlds. And it doesn't take much more than a few minutes if you're sincere. So, it's better to simply sit for 5 or chant or pray for 5 minutes each day than for none at all. Because the key about anything holistic is consistency. It doesn't take ability. It doesn't take intellect. It pivots on nothing other than he who perseveres, as the Buddha said. And yeah, I've spoken, I've talked to you about this. It helps to meditate at Brahma Muhurti, or the hour of God, which is the twilight of morning and evening. But really, whenever you can, just carve out. And I say carve out because, man, you have to take a Manjushri sword to carve out that time. I know. I'm a new dad. I run my own businesses. I try to train. There's no time to meditate. So you have to carve it out. I mean, you really have to. The second step is to listen to your mind. Now, most of us, in L.A., I saw a lot of homeless people, and they're wandering the streets in dirty clothes, and a lot of times they're just jabbering on and on to no one in particular. They're just running at the mouth. And we think, oh, man, that poor person, that's really crazy. However, the very moment we sit down and fold our legs and sit still, even for 5 minutes, let alone 40, we begin to see, I hate to tell you, our minds are in the same state of disarray as the hobos. Now, we might not give voice to our chattering, runaway minds, but when we sit still and begin to listen to our minds, we realize with sometimes personality shifting intensity that, man, we have no idea who we truly are. So you have to be brave enough to at least listen to your mind. That's the second step. The third step, in my opinion, these are just my kind of takes, is we have to develop an elegant, accurate sitting posture. And through my books and audios and videos and teachings, I've dealt a lot with this. I've detailed appropriate sitting postures. The emphasis has to be on two things, an open hips to some degree, and an erect yet not stiff spine. And an accurate sitting posture prepares the subtle anatomy, particularly the sushumna and the three primary nadis, for safely attaining that most amazing benchmark of all meditate, engaged sushumna. So once the sushumna, the subtle spine, becomes engaged, you don't have to fight to meditate so much, because once the sushumna, the subtle spine, is engaged and those energies are palpable, then it's just like the best thing ever. So, that's where the emergence can occur. We don't have time to go any further on that, but I'm sure we will. Step 4, sankalpa. Essentially, sankalpa means determination, and this step 4 means establishing your willpower. Hey, that's cool. I did see with 2 billion people, I saw the royal wedding of Kate, and don't tell me, Prince William. And it was cool because instead of saying "I do" at their vows, they said "I will," "I will," and that's very cool. I enjoyed a lot of the Dharma that they chose to put forth, and I thought it was very cool. Because before we do anything, we have to determine that we will do it, that we have to do it, and that you can do it. That's sankalpa. And that's why I feel that sport performance is such a fantastic conditioner for meditators. And that's why I've been so shocked throughout the years where I've kind of tested, expert and professional meditators over the years in varying degrees in various sports, and I was shocked at how few of them really had holistic sankalpa. I mean, when physical intensity got really hard, their minds, even though they were an expert at meditation, it was amazing how they couldn't deal with, the intensity of the physical realm. So you and I hate to tell you, we're on a very, very powerful path here, and we can contribute to higher consciousness in the decades ahead. The fifth step is cultivating a witness, and that is that's a big one. That's when we learn to witness the chattering of our minds. If we can learn to witness without judging, without getting depressed and annoyed, if we just sit with it and witness it, then we can also learn to witness all the things of the outer world, all the inner world. And this includes all sorts of intense circumstances and sad circumstances. But we don't have to identify with any of it because we've learned to just witness it. And that is when a meditator truly becomes a seer, a witness, to the immense elah, play of it all. So, it's 7 o'clock. I wish to thank you deeply for choosing to spend this time together, and may the power and the truth of our practice together, may it help ease the suffering of all beings in all realms. May it help people find happiness and the causations of happiness. May it help people to live in equanimity without too much attachment or too much aversion, and live believing in the equality of all that live. We have no time for questions tonight because I ran at the mouth. Fortunately, I'm one of the most accessible coaches on the planet. I like to think that anyway. And if your spirit is strong, you can always ask me questions in the Sangha Lounge, through email, and I will always do my best to be here now for you. Dharma blessings upon your practice. May your sittings be elegant and accurate. And may your silences become more and more divine. Namaste, noble warriors.